I'm alone, far away from the horror, standing weightless and clean on a road that smells of moss and earth. My feet touch the ground, but I cannot feel it underfoot. To either side stretches the grass of wind-beaten moors. The sky flashes with lightning. My hands are without sigils and drift along the cobbled wall that meanders on ahead to either side. When did I start walking? Somewhere in the distance, wood smoke rises. I follow the road, but I feel I have no choice. A voice calls to me from beyond a hill.
Oh, doom. Oh, marriage chamber, a hollowed out house that will watch forever where I go. To my own people who are mostly there. Persephone has taken him to her. Last of them all, ill-fated past the rest, shall I descend before my course is run. Still, when I get there, I may hope to find I come as a dear friend to my dear father.
It is my uncle's voice.
To you, my mother.
Is this the veil? Is this the road I walk before death? It can't be. In the veil, there is no pain. But my body aches. My legs sting.
And my brother too.
Still, I hear his voice ahead of me, drawing me through the mist. The man who taught me to dance after my father died. Who guarded me and sent me to Ares. Who died himself in a mineshaft. And dwells now in the veil.
I wash your bodies.
I thought it would be Io who greeted me. Or my father. Not Nerl.
Keep reading. Dr. Verne said he can hear us. He just has to find his way back.
Even as I walk, I feel a bed under me. The air around cold and crisp in my lungs. The sheets soft and clean. The muscles in my legs twitch. Feels like little bees are stinging them. And with each sting, the dream world fades, and I slide back into my body.
Well, if we're gonna read to this squabber, might as well be something red, not this poncy violet shit.
Dancer said this was one of his favorites.
My eyes open. I'm in a bed. White sheets. IVs going into my arms. Under the sheets, I touch the ant-sized nodes that have been stuck to my legs to channel electrical current through my muscles to combat atrophy. The room's a cave. Scientific equipment, machines and terraria, litter it. It was Uncle Nerl I heard in the dream after all. But he's not in the veil. He's alive. He sits at my bedside, squinting down at one of Mickey's old books. He's grizzled and wiry, even for a red. Calloused hands trying to be gentle with the frail paper pages. He's bald now, and deeply sunburned on his forearms and the back of his neck. Still looks like he was cobbled together out of cracked old leather. He'll be 41 now. Looks older, more savage. A brooding danger to him. Lent teeth by the railgun in his thigh holster. A sling blade has been sewn onto his black military jacket above a society logo that's been peeled off and inverted. Red at the top, gold, the foundation. The man's been at war. Beside him sits my mother, a bent, fragile woman since her stroke. How many times did I imagine the jackal standing over her, pliers in hand. She's been safe the whole time. Her crooked fingers weave needle and thread through tattered socks, patching the holes. They don't move like they used to. Age and infirmity have slowed her. Her broken body is not what she is on the inside. There she stands, tall as any gold, broad as any obsidian. Watching her sit there, breathing quietly, intent on her task. I want to protect her more than anything else in the world. I want to heal her, give her all she never had. I love her so much. I don't know what to say. What to do that can ever show her how much she means to me.
Mother.
They look up. Neryl, frozen in his chair. My mother setting a hand on his and rising slowly to my bedside. Her steps slow, wary.
Hello, child.
She stands above me, overwhelming me with the love in her eyes. My hand is almost larger than her head, but I gently touch her face, as if to prove to myself she is real. I trace the crow's feet from her eyes to the grey hair at her temples. As a boy, I did not like her as much as I liked father. She would hit me at times. She would weep alone and pretend nothing was wrong. And now all I want is to listen to her hum as she cooks. All I want are those still nights where we had peace and I was a child. I want the time back.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
She kisses my forehead and rocks her head against mine. She smells like rust and sweat and oil. Like home. She tells me I am her son. There is nothing to apologize for. I am safe. I am loved. The family is here. Kieran, Liana, their children. Waiting to see me. I sob uncontrollably, sharing all the pain my solitude forced me to hoard. The tears, a deeper language than my tongue can afford. I'm exhausted by the time she kisses me again on the head and pulls back. Neryl comes to her side and puts a hand on my arm.
Neryl!
Hello, you little bastard. Still your father's son, eh?
I thought you were dead.
Nah. Death chewed on me a bit, then spat my bloody ass back out. Said there was killing that needed doing, and some wild blood of mine that needed saving.
He grins down at me, that old scar on his lips joined by two new ones.
We've been waiting for you to wake up. It's been 2 days since they brought you back in the shuttle.
I can still taste the smoke from burned flesh in the back of my throat.
Where are we?
Tinos. The city of Ares.
Tinos? Severo, Ragnar.
They're alive.
Neryl pushes me back down.
Don't rip out your tubes and res flesh. Took Dr. Verney hours to thread you up after that bloody mess of an escape. Bone Riders were supposed to be an EMP radius. They weren't. They ripped us to pieces in the tunnels. Ragnar's the only reason you're living.
You were there?
Who do you think led the drill team that punched up into Attica? It was Lycos blood, Lambda and Omicron.
And what about Victra?
Easy, boy.
He sets his hand on my chest to stop me from trying to get up again.
She's with the docs, aim for the Grey. They're alive, getting patched.
You need to check me, Neryl. Tell the doctors to check me for radiation trackers, for implants. They might have let me go on purpose, to find Tinos. I need to see Severo.
Boy, he said easy. We checked you. 2 implants were in you, but both fried in the EMP. You weren't tracked. And Ares ain't here. He's still out with the Howlers. Came back just to deliver the wounded and scarf down grub.
There were almost a dozen wolf cloaks. So, he's recruited. Thistle betrayed us. But Vix has mentioned Pebble and Clown. Wonder if Screwface is with them too.
Ares is always on the move.
Lots to do. Only one Ares. They're still out looking for survivors. They'll be back soon. By morning, luck holds.
My mother shoots him a harsh look, and he shuts up. I lean back in the bed, overwhelmed by speaking to them, by seeing them. I can barely form sentences. So much to say. So much unfamiliar emotion running through me. All I end up doing is sitting there, breathing fast. My mother's love fills the room, but still I feel the darkness moving beyond this moment. Pressing in on this family I thought I lost, and now fear I cannot protect. My enemies are too great, too many, and I too weak. I shake my head, running my thumb over her knuckles.
I thought I would never see you again.
Yet here you are.
Somehow she makes it sound cold. So like my mother to be the one with dry eyes when both the men can barely speak. I always wondered how I survived the Institute. It damn well wasn't because of my father. He was a gentleman. Mother is the spine in me, the iron. And I clutch her hand as if such a simple gesture could say all that. A light knock comes at the door. Dancer pokes his head in, devilishly handsome as ever. He's one of the only Reds alive who makes old age look good. I can hear his foot dragging slightly behind him in the hall. Both my mother and uncle nod to him in deference. Neryl steps aside respectfully as he approaches my bedside. But my mother stays put.
This Helldiver's not done yet, it would seem.
Dancer grips my hand.
But you gave us a hell of a scare.
It's bloody damn good to see you, Dancer.
And you, boy. And you.
Thank you for taking care of them.
I nod to my mother and uncle.
For helping Severo.
It's what family is for. How are you?
My chest hurts. And everything else.
It should. Virani says that crank the Nakamoras gave you almost killed you. You had a heart attack.
Dancer, how did the Jackal know? Every day I've wondered. Picked it apart. The clues I left him. Did I give myself up?
It wasn't you. It was Harmony.
Harmony? Which she wouldn't. She hates gold.
But even as I say it, I know how reckless her hate is. How vengeful she must have felt after I did not detonate the bomb she gave me to kill the Sovereign and the others on Luna.
She thinks we've sold out the Rebellion. That we're compromising too much. She told the Jackal who you were.
He knew when I was in his office. When I gave him the gift.
He nods, tiredly.
Your presence proved her claims. So the Jackal let us rescue her and the others. We brought her back to base, and an hour before his kill squads came, she disappeared.
Fitchner is dead because of her. He gave her a purpose. I understand how she could betray me. But him? Ares?
She found out he was a gold. Then she gave him up. Must have given the Jackal the base's coordinates.
Ares was her hero. Her god. After her children died in the mines, he gave her a reason to live. A reason to fight. And then she discovered he was the enemy. And she got him killed. It crushes me to think that's why he died. Dancer surveys me, quietly. It's clear I'm not what he expected. Mother and Neryl watch him almost as carefully as they watch me, deducing the same.
I know I'm not what I was.
No, boy. You've been through hell. It's not that.
Then, what is it?
He exchanges a look with my mother.
You're sure?
He needs to know. Tell him.
Neryl nods too. Dancer hesitates still. He looks for a chair. Neryl rushes to pull one out for him and set it near the bed. Dancer nods his thanks and then leans over me, making a steeple on his fingers.
Darrow, you've gone too long with people hiding things from you. So I want to be very transparent from here forward. Until 5 days ago, we thought you were dead.
I was close enough.
No. I mean we stopped looking for you 9 months ago.
My mother's hand tightens on mine.
3 months after you were captured, the Golds executed you on the HC for treason. They dragged a boy, identical to you, out to the steps of the Citadel in Aegea, and read off your crimes, pretending you were still a Gold. We tried to free you, but it was a trap. We lost thousands of men.
His eyes drift over my lips. My hair.
He had your eyes, your scars, your bloody damn face. and we had to watch as the Jackal cut off your head and destroyed your obelisk on Mars Field.
I stare at them, not fully comprehending.
We grieved for you, child. The whole clan, city. I led the fading dirge myself, and we buried your boots in the deep tunnels beyond Tinos.
Nero crosses his arms, trying to seal himself off from the memory.
It was just like you. Same walk, same face. I thought I'd watched you die again.
It was likely a flesh mask, or they carved someone, or digital effects. Doesn't matter now. The Jackal killed you as an Oriat, not as a Red.
The Jackal promised he would hurt those I love. And now I see how deeply he has. My mother's facade has broken. All the grief she's kept inside thickens behind her eyes as she stares down at me, guilt straining her face.
I gave up on you. I gave up.
It's not your fault. You couldn't have known.
Sephiroth did.
He never stopped looking for you. I thought he was mad. He said you weren't dead. That he could feel it. That he would know. I even asked him to give up the helm to someone else. He was too reckless searching for you.
But the bastard found you.
Aye, he did. I was wrong in it. I should have believed in you. Believed in him.
How did you find me?
Theodora designed an operation.
She's here.
Working for us in intelligence. Woman's got contacts. Some of her informants in a pearl club caught word that the Olympic Knights were taking a package from Attica back to Luna for the Sovereign. Several believed you were that package, and he put a huge portion of our reserve resources behind this attack.
Burned. As he speaks, I watch my mother stare distantly at a crackling light bulb in the ceiling. What is this like for her? For a mother to see her child broken by other men? To see the pain written in scars on his skin, spoken in silences, in far-off looks. How many mothers have prayed to see their sons, their daughters, return from war, only to realize the war has kept them, the world has poisoned them, and they'll never be the same. For 9 months, Mother has grieved for me. Now she's drowning in guilt for giving up, and desperation in hearing the war swallow me again, knowing she's helpless to stop it. In the past years, I've trampled over so many to get what I think I want. If this is my last chance at life, I want to do it right.
Problem isn't material.
I need to.
It's manpower we need.
Dancer! Stop.
Stop?
He frowns in confusion, glancing at Nero.
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. But I'll talk with you in the morning about this.
The morning? Darrow, the world is shifting under your feet. We've lost control over the other Red factions. The suns will not last the year. I have to give you a debriefing. We need you back. There's so much...
Dancer, I am alive.
Thinking of all the questions I want to ask about the war, my friends, how I was undone, about Mustang. But that can wait.
Do you even know how lucky I am? To be able to see you all again in this world. I haven't seen my brother or my sister in years. So, tomorrow, I'll listen to your debriefing. Tomorrow the war can have me again. But tonight, I belong to my family.
I hear the children before we reach the door. I feel a guest in someone else's dream, unfit for the world of children. But I've little say in the matter as Mother pushes my wheelchair forward into a cramped dormitory cluttered with metal bunks, children, the smell of shampoo, and noise. 5 of the children of my blood, fresh from the showers by the looks of their hair and the little sandals on the floor, are scrumming on one of the bunks. 2 taller 9-year-olds holding an alliance against 2 6-year-olds and a tiny little cherub of a girl who keeps headbutting the biggest boy in the leg. He hasn't yet noticed her. The 6th child in the room, I remember from when I visited Mother in Lycos. The little girl who couldn't sleep. One of Kieran's. She watches the other children over her glossy book of fables from another bunk and is the first to notice me. Kieran bursts up from his game of dice with Liana when he sees me. Liana's slower behind him.
Darrow!
He rushes to me and stops just before my wheelchair. He's bearded now too, in his mid-20s. No slump to his shoulders like there used to be. His eyes radiate a goodness that I used to think made him a little foolish. Now, it just seems wildly brave.
Oh!
Remembering himself, he waves his children forward.
Regan, Hyrule, children, come meet my little brother. Come meet your uncle.
The children line up awkwardly around him. A baby laughs from the back of the room, and a young mother rises from her bunk where she was breastfeeding the child.
Heo?
The woman's a vision of the past. Small, face the shape of a heart. Her hair a thick, tangled mess. The sort that frizzes on humid days. Like Eo's did. But this is not Eo. Her eyes are smaller, her nose elfin. More delicacy here than fire. And this is a woman, not a girl like my wife was. 20 years old now, by my count. They all stare at me, strangely, wondering if I am mad. Except Eo, Eo's sister, whose face splits with a smile.
I'm sorry, Dio. You look just like her.
Don't apologize. It's the kindest thing you could have said.
And who's that then?
I ask of the baby she holds. The little girl's hair is absurd. Rust red and bound together by a hair tie so it sticks straight up on top of her head in a little antenna. She watches me excitedly with her dark red eyes.
This little thing? Oh, this is someone I've been wanting to introduce you to since Deanna told us you were alive.
She looks lovingly to my brother. I feel a pang of jealousy.
This is our first. Would you like to hold her?
Hold her? No, I'm...
The girl's pudgy little hands reach for me, and Dio pushes the girl into my lap before I can recoil. The girl clings to my sweater, grunting as she turns and wriggles around till she's seated according to her liking on my leg. She claps her hands together and laughs, completely unaware of what I am, of why my hands are so scarred, delighted by the size of them and the gold sigils. She grabs my thumb and tries to bite it with her gums. Her world is alien to the horrors I know. All the child sees is love. Her skin is pale and soft against mine. She's made of clouds, and I of stone. Her eyes large and bright, like her mother's. Her demeanor and thin lips, like Kieran's. Were this another life, she might have been my child, with Eo. My wife would have laughed to think it would be my brother and her sister together in the end, and not us. We were a little storm that couldn't last. But maybe Dio and Kieran will. Long after the lights have dimmed throughout the complex to ease the burdens on the generators, I sit with my uncle and brother around the table in the back of the room, listening to Kieran tell me his new duties, learning from Oranges how to service ripwings and shuttles. Dio went to bed long ago, but she left me the baby, who now sleeps in my arms, shifting here and there as her dreams take her, wherever they may.
It's really not that wretched here. Better than the stacks below. We have food, water showers. Oh, no more flushes. There's a lake above us, they say. Bloody damn dazzling stuff, the showers. Children love it.
He watches his children in the low light. Two to a bed, shifting quietly as they sleep.
What's hard is not knowing what'll be for them. Will they ever mine? Work in the webbery? I always thought they would. That I was passing something down. A mission. A craft. You hear?
Why not?
I guess I wanted my sons to be hell divers. Like you. Like Pa. But...
There's nothing to that now that you got eyes. It's a hollow life when you know you're being stepped on.
Aye. Die by 30, so those folk can live to 100. It ain't bloody damn right. I just want my children to have more than this, brother.
He stares at me, intensely. And I remember how my mother asked me what comes after revolution. What world are we making? It was what Mustang asked. Something EO never considered.
They have to have more than this. And I love Ares as much as anyone. I owe him a life, the lives of my children. But...
He shakes his head, wanting to say more, but feeling the weight of Nerl's eyes on him.
Go on.
I don't know if he knows what comes next. That's why I'm glad you're back, little brother. I know you've got a plan. I know you can save us.
He says it with so much faith. So much trust.
Of course I have a plan,
I say, because I know it's what he needs to hear. But as my brother contentedly refills his mug, my uncle catches my eye, and I know he sees through the lie. And we both feel the darkness pressing in. It's early morning, as I sip coffee and eat a bowl of grain cereal my mother fetched me from the commissary. I'm not yet ready for crowds. Kieran and Liana have already gone to work, so I sit with Dio and Mother as the children dress for school. It's a good sign. You know what people have given up when they stop teaching their children. I finish my coffee. Mother pours me more.
You took an entire pot?
The chef insisted. Tried to give me two.
It's almost like the real thing.
It is the real thing. There's this pirate who sends us hijacked goods. Coffee is from Earth, I think. Jamaica, they said.
I don't correct her.
Oi!
A voice screams in the hallways. My mother jumps at the sound.
Reaper, Reaper, come out and play.
There's a crash in the hall and the sound of stomping boots.
Remember, Diana told us to knock.
You are so annoying. Fine.
A polite knock comes at the door.
Tidings! It's Uncle Severo and the moderately friendly giant.
My mother motions to one of my excited nieces.
Ella, do us kind.
Ella darts forward to open the door for Severo. He bursts through, scooping her up. She shrieks with joy. He's in his undersuit, the black sweat-wicking fabric that soldiers wear under pulse armor. Sweat rings stain the armpits. His eyes dance as he sees me, and he tosses Ella roughly onto a bed and charges toward me, arms outstretched. A weird laugh escapes his chest, hatchet face split with a jagged grin, his hair a dirty, sweat-soaked mohawk.
Severo, careful!
Reap!
He slams into me, spinning my chair sideways, clacking my teeth together as he half lifts me out of the chair, stronger than he was, smelling of tobacco and engine fuel and sweat. He half laughs, half cries like an excited dog into my chest.
I knew you were alive. I bloody damn knew it. Pixie bitches can't fool me.
Pulling back, he looks down at me with a rickshaw grin.
Oh, you bloody damn bastard.
Language.
Oh, my ribs. Oh, shit. Sorry, brother man.
He lets me sink back into the chair and kneels, so we're eye to eye.
I said it once, now I'll say it twice. There's two things in this world that can't be killed. It's the fungus under my sack and the Reaper of bloody damn Mars.
Several.
Sorry, Deanna, sorry.
Several. Oh, you smell terrible.
I haven't showered in 5 days.
He brags. Grabbing his groin.
It's a Severo soup in here, boyo. you know, you look...
He glances at my mother and tames his tongue.
Bloody terrible.
A shadow falls over the room as a man enters and blocks the overhead light near the door. The children cluster joyously around Ragnar so he can barely walk.
Hello, Reaper.
I greet Ragnar with a smile. His face is as impassive as ever, tattooed and pale, calloused from the wind of his Arctic home, like the hide of a rhinoceros. His white beard is braided into four strands, and the hair on his head shaved, except for a tail of white that is braided with red ribbons. The children are asking him if he's brought them presents.
Severo, your eyes.
Do you like them?
Buried in that squinting, sharp-angled face, his eyes are no longer that dirty shade of gold, but are now as red as Martian soil. He pulls back his lids so I can better see. They're not contacts, and the right is no longer bionic.
Bloody dumb. Did you get carved?
By the best in the business. Do you like them?
They're bloody damn marvelous. Fit you like a glove.
Glad you said that. Because they're yours.
I blanch.
What?
They're yours.
My what?
Your eyes.
My eyes?
Wait, did yon friendly giant drop you on your head in the rescue? Mickey had your eyes in a cryo box at his joint in Yorkton. Creepy place, by the way. When we raided it for supplies to bring back to Tinos to help the Rising. I figured you weren't using them, so...
He shrugs, awkwardly.
So I asked if he'd put him in. You know, bring us closer together. Something to remember you by. That's not so weird, right?
Yeah, I told him it was odd.
Ragnar says, as one of the girls climbs his leg.
Do you want the eyes back? I can give them back.
No, it's just... I forgot how crazy you are.
Oh, good. Thought it was something serious. So, I'm prime keeping him?
Finders keepers.
The honor of Lycos. May we borrow your son for martial matters?
Ragnar asks my mother.
He has much to do. Many things to know.
Only if you return him in one piece. And you take some coffee with you. And bring these socks to the laundry.
My mother pushes a bag of freshly patched socks into Ragnar's arms.
As you wish.
Didn't you bring presents?
One of my nephews asks.
I've got a present for you.
Severo, no!
What?
He pulls out a bag.
It's just candy this time. And that's when Ragnar tripped over Pebble and fell out the back of the transport. Like a dumbass.
He's eating a candy bar over my head as he pushes my wheelchair recklessly through the stone corridor. He sprints fast again and hops on the back to coast till we swerve into the wall. Ugh. I wince in pain.
So, Ragnar falls straight into the sea. Thing was full of chop, man. Waves the size of torch ships. So, I dive in too, thinking he needs my help. Just in time for this huge... God, I don't know what the hell you'd call it. Some carved beastie.
Demon.
Ragnar says from behind. I hadn't noticed him following.
It was a sea demon from the third level of hell.
Yeah, sure.
Severo guides me around a corner, clipping the wall hard enough to make me bite my tongue, and sending a cluster of Sun's pilots scattering. They stare after me as we trundle on.
This sea demon apparently thinks Ragnar is a tasty-looking morsel, so he gobbles him up almost as soon as he hits the water. So I see this, and I'm laughing my ass off with Screwface, as one would because it's bloody damn hilarious, and you know how Screwface loves a good joke. But then the beastie dives, so I follow. And I'm chasing it, shooting my pulse fist at a bloody damn sea... demon as it swims to the bottom of the damn thermic sea. You know, pressure's building, my suit's wheezing, and I think I'm about to die. When suddenly, Ragnar cuts his way out of the scaly bitch.
He leans close.
But guess where he came out? Come on, guess.
Severo, did he come out the sea demon's rectum?
He did! Right out of the ass! Shot like a turd! Oh.
My chair rolls to a stop. His voice cut short, followed by a thump and sliding sound. My wheelchair rolls forward again. I look back and see Ragnar pushing it innocently along. Severo isn't in the hallway behind us. I frown, wondering where he went, till he bursts out of a side passage.
You, troll! I'm a terrorist warlord. Stop throwing me. You made me drop my candy.
Severo looks at the floor of the hallway.
Wait, where is it? Damn it, Ragnar, where is my peanut bar? You know how many people I had to kill to get that? Six. Six!
Ragnar chews quietly above me. And though I'm probably mistaken, I think I see him smile.
Ragnar, have you been brushing your teeth? They look splendid.
Thank you.
He preens, as much as a man 8 feet tall can preen, past a mouthful of peanut butter bar.
The wizard removed my old ones. They pained me greatly. These are new. Are they not fine?
Mickey, the wizard.
Indeed. He also taught me to read before he left Tinos.
Ragnar proves this by reading every single sign and warning we pass in the hall, till we enter the hangar bay some 10 minutes later. Severo follows behind, still complaining about his lost candy. The hangar is cramped by society standards, but it's still nearly 30 meters high and 60 wide. It's been cut into the rock by laser drills. The floor is stone, blasted black from engines. Several dilapidated shuttles sit in berths beside three shining new ripwings. Reds, directed by two oranges, service the ships and stare at me as we wheel past. I feel an outsider here. A motley group of soldiers ambles away from a battered shuttle. Some are still in armor, with their wolf cloaks hanging from their shoulders. Others are stripped down to their undersuits, or go bare-chested.
Boss!
Pebble cries from under Clown's arm. She's as plump as ever, and she grins at me, hauling Clown along to move faster. His puffy hair is matted with sweat as he leans on the shorter girl. Both their faces are bright when they approach, as if I were exactly as they remembered. Pebble shoves Clown off her shoulder to give me a hug. Clown, for his part, gives a ludicrous bow.
Howlers reporting for duty, Primus! Sorry about the kerfuffle.
Shit got prickly.
Exceedingly prickly. Something different about you, Reaper.
Clown puts his hands on his hips.
You look slender. Did you trim your hair? Don't tell me, it's the beard. Terribly slimming.
Kind of you to notice. And to stay. Considering everything.
What, you mean you lying to us for 5 years?
Yes. That.
Well, I...
Pebble thumps his shoulder before he can light into me.
Of course we'd stay, Reaper. This is our family.
But we have demands, if you desire our full services. But for now, we must be off. I fear I have shrapnel in my ass. So I beg your leave. Come, Pebble, to the surgeons. Ow.
Bye, boss. Glad you're not dead.
Squad dinner at 8. Don't be late. Shrapnel in your ass is not an excuse, Clown.
Yes, sir.
Severo turns to me with a grin.
Sods didn't even bat an eye when I told them you were a ruster. Came with me in rags to fetch your family right off. Was wicked telling them what was what, though. This way.
As we pass the ship Pebble and Clown exited, I see up the ramp into its belly. Two young boys work inside, blasting the floors with hoses. The water runs brownish-red down the ramp onto the hangar deck, flowing not into a drain, but down a narrow trough toward the edge of the hangar, where it disappears over the edge.
Some dads leave ships or villas for their sons. Asshat Ares left me this wretched hive of angst and peasantry.
Bloody damn.
I realize what exactly I'm looking at. Beyond the hangar is an inverted forest of stalactites. It glitters in the artificial subterranean dawn, not only from the water that dribbles along their slick grey surfaces, but from the lights of docks, barracks and sensor arrays that give teeth to Ares's great bastion. Supply ships flit between the multiple docks.
We're in a stalactite.
But then I look down at the horror beneath, and the weight on my shoulders doubles. 100 meters below our stalactite sprawls a refugee camp. Once it was an underground city, carved into the stone of Mars. The streets are so deep between the buildings, they're more like miniature canyons. And the city spills over the floor of the colossal cave to the far walls, kilometers away, where more honeycombed homes have been built. Streets switch back up the sandstone. But over that, a new, roofless city has spawned. One of refugees. Muddled skin and fabrics and hair all writhing like some weird, fleshy sea. They sleep on rooftops, in the streets, on the switchback stairs. I see makeshift symbols for Gamma, Omicron, Upsilon, all the 12 clans that they divide my people into. I'm stunned by the sight.
How many are there?
Shit if I know. At least 20 mines. Lycos was small compared to some of the ones near the larger H3 deposits.
465,000, according to the logs.
Only 500,000.
Seems like a hell of a lot more, right?
I nod.
Why are they here?
Yeah, had to give them shelter. Poor bastards all come from the mines the Jackal has purged, pumping Arcles 9 into the vents if he even suspects a son's presence. It's an invisible genocide.
A chill passes through me.
The liquidation protocol. Board of Quality Control's last measure for compromised mines. How do you keep this all secret? Jammers?
Yeah, and we're more than two clicks underground. Pop altered the topographical maps in the Society's database. To the Golds, this is bedrock that was depleted of helium-3 more than 300 years ago. Clever enough, for now.
And how do you feed everyone?
We don't. I mean, we try, but there haven't been rats in Tinos for a month. People are sleeping toe to nose. We've started moving refugees into the stalactites, but disease is already ripping through the people. Don't have enough meds, and I can't risk my sons getting sick. Without them, we don't have teeth. We're just a sick cow waiting to be slaughtered.
And they rioted.
Rioted?
Yeah, almost forgot about that. Had to cut rations by half. They were already so small. Those ungrateful shitheads down there didn't like that much.
Many lost their lives before I descended.
The Shield of Tinos. Ragnar's more popular than I am, that's for damn sure. They don't blame him for shit rations. But I'm more popular than Dancer, because I have a badass helmet and he's in charge of the nitty-gritty shit I can't do. People are so stupid. Man breaks his back for them and they think he's a dull-wit penny-pincher. At least the sons love him, and your uncle.
It's like we've fallen back 1,000 years.
Pretty much, except for the generators. There's a river that runs underneath the stone, so there's water, sanitation, power, sometimes. And there's lecherous shit, too. Crime, murders, rapes, theft. We have to keep the Gamma slag separate from everyone else. Some Omicrons hanged this little Gamma kid last week and carved the gold sigil into his chest, ripped the red sigils out of his arms. They said he was a loyalist, a Goldie. He was 14.
I feel sick.
We keep the lights bright, even at night.
Yeah. Turn them off, it gets, otherworldly downstairs.
Severo looks tired as he stares down at the city. My friend knows how to fight, but this is another battle entirely. I stare down at the city, unable to find the words I need to say. I feel like a prisoner who spent his whole life digging through the wall, only to break through and find he's dug into another cell. Except there will always be another cell, and another, and another. These people are not living. They're all just trying to postpone the end.
This is not what EO wanted.
Yeah, well, dreaming's easy. War isn't.
He chews on his lip, thoughtfully.
You see, Cassius, et al.?
Twice, at the end. Why?
Oh, nothing.
He turns to me, eyes glittering.
It's just that he's the one who put Pops down.